Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Young Environmental Leaders is composed of Tallahassee middle school and high school students. Its goal is to provide instruction, perform public service, and initiate the development of ideas and long-term solutions for existing environmental problems. Students are given a voice to be heard in society. Their mission as advocates is to empower, improve, educate, and support the growth of tomorrow's leaders through the combined knowledge and experience of today's youth and their supporters. Students learn to enlighten the community on energy issues and address present and future environmental concerns. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me here in the studio, I welcome Young Environmental Leaders Community. Joining me, I welcome Charlotte Stewart Tilley. Charlotte is in the ninth grade. She's homeschooled. Charlotte was the organizer of the climate strikes in Tallahassee. She's into geology and environmental science and has studied piano for 10 years. She's a dynamic young woman. We had quite a conversation.
Hello, welcome, folks.
Jacob Sperber. Jacob also is homeschooled. He's in the seventh grade. He enjoys environmental activism, chess, piano, and Legos.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for coming. Nicole Knutson is supervisor of YEL, or Young Environmental Leaders. She hails from Melbourne. She's a senior at FSU, majoring in environmental science.
Hi. Glad to be here.
Leland McCullough is also a student at FSU. She is a senior. She's majoring in family and child sciences and psychology.
Hi, everybody.
And Sabrina Hugh. She's at Rickards High School. She's a junior. Environment, neuroscience, and inventing are her thing.
Hi, everyone.
Welcome, all of you, to 411 Teen. Young Environmental Leaders, how did it evolve? I'll look to you all to maybe share with us, you know, the evolution of how it started.
So originally, the Young Environmental Leaders program was started by our former Director of Education, Christina Mumbaya. She felt that there was a need in Tallahassee for a program that would encourage kids to use their voice. And so she actually went out and formed one, along with our former political advocacy coordinator, V. Miller.
Okay, and what was the goal? What was she trying to do? I mean, you say just give them a voice to...
Give them a voice to talk about environmental issues that they're passionate about that are going to be affecting them in the future.
Okay. And how long has the organization been around now?
About a year.
Okay. Is there anything similar to it in other parts of the state that you're aware of?
Not to my knowledge, and definitely not in Tallahassee. I've spoken with some of the YEL members, and they say that they don't even have environmental clubs at their school, and that there's a real need for this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. What is the relationship with Young Environmental Leaders and Rethink Energy Florida?
So,
shout out to Kim Ross and V and all those folks.
Yes. Since a rethink worker started this program, it's kind of been taken on by Rethink Energy Florida, and it's funded by Rethink, and
so sound like the parent.
Yeah. So Rethink, I guess, gave birth to this program in a way.
Okay. How did you all become involved? And I'll just start with you and go along. How did you become involved, Charlotte? How did you know about it? How did Christina, I guess, recruit you, or how did she go about getting it?
Well, of course, I know Kim Ross, too, and I've been a family friend of hers since about 2009 or so, actually. I'm 14 for context, so it's been a long time. but I remember getting involved with Rethink Energy when I was very, very young, and that carried on to doing their energy camp during the summer. And I knew Christina from that, and she asked me if I wanted to be a part of YEL after I showed interest in climate activism last fall.
Okay. And you, Sabrina?
Well, I visited the Tallahassee Science Fair, and that's how I got involved with Rethink Energy Florida. And then so I had an idea about a project that I wanted to do. I'd learned about fuel cells and thought they were such a cool technology that's not that well known, especially among my peers. So I wanted to create an educational outreach involving these fuel cells for students my age. And then I was directed towards Yale, and they said that this program could help me develop and promote my project. And then I got into it, and I thought it was such a great cause.
Tell me about your project. Where is it? Where are you with the project?
Yeah, I'm still in the process of developing it, but I actually presented at the energy camp that Charlotte was just talking about. It's about these little fuel cell cars, and they take hydrogen and it powers these anything, well, electricity, and it can essentially cut out the entire, like, greenhouse emission cycle if you wanted to. And then, like, the hydrogen is gained from the water being split into oxygen and hydrogen. Okay. And that hydrogen is put through a fuel cell, and that's what powers it. And then there are these little fuel cell car kits, and I thought they were so adorable and great for learning. And I wanted to just spread this to everyone, or specifically students. And so Yale right now is helping me find teachers who are willing to help me, like let me do this presentation in their class, and like get funding, and it's just
Really exciting.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it.
Yeah. And Jacob, share with us how you became involved.
So one of my neighbors named Ingrid Hanley, who's also a member of YEL, was doing it for a while, and then when we were playing together a while ago, she just let me know about it. And because she thought I might be interested. And so I checked it out, and I realized it was something that could really help me advance my project.
Okay, and what's your project, and what was the appeal? How do you become so connected with it?
My project is trying to get small-scale local organizations to compost their food waste. And so YEL has really helped me, like, organize my plan and, like, figure out the concrete steps I need to do to get the organizations to compost.
So where are you in that? Have you started getting organizations to compost? Or how'd you go about that?
I'm still figuring out, like, what I'll say, but I know generally what I'm going to present them with.
Sounds like you're moving right along. Sounds great. How does one become a part of the organization? I mean, if somebody is listening and they hear this and they think, wow, you know, I might want to join that. What do they do? How do they do it? How do they become involved?
So it's really, really easy. All you have to do is email me, Nikki at Rethink Energy Florida. That's N-I-K-K-I at Rethink Energy Florida, the full word Florida. And I will go ahead and look over any sort of application that you have, and we'd love to have everybody.
Okay, is there a cost involved? Let's get a few more details just about the organization. For example, how often it meets, if there's a cost involved, what are the limits as far as age, or what? Just share with us.
So there is no cost. Anybody can be involved in Young Environmental Leaders. In fact, we are really interested in looking to serve some of these underserved communities that we have in Tallahassee. So we welcome those that may not have the financial ability to be a part of another organization that that requires cash. So there is no fee to be involved in the club. We encourage kids to apply if they are in middle school or high school, but we do accept elementary schoolers if they are very mature for their age. And yeah, that's about it.
Okay, that sounds great. Advocacy is a big part of your organization. Why is advocacy so important? And what do you all do? How have you advocated for, I guess, climate change, the environment?
So personally, I led the student strikes in Tallahassee, and I'm hoping to continue to do so for the next couple semesters. So last fall, I read about the environmental activist Greta Thunberg, and she started a model called school striking, where kids refuse to go to school because they're angry about the lack of action against climate change. And I thought that was a brilliant idea. I'm homeschooled, and I know all my peers, most of their life is going to school. That's a substantial portion of their week. And I thought that that's like one job. If kids had a job, that's our job. We go to school. And so using that job and using that power we have in society to create a political movement, I thought that was like a genius idea for teenagers to get involved in. So I wanted to strike on my own and hopefully have my friends join me. So the following January, I contacted a bunch of people I knew, and I asked them if they would join me, and they said yes. So that first strike, I think it was January 18th, we had over 100 people come. We started striking the following Friday, or the Friday after the Friday, and we've been striking every other Friday since then, with taking a break for the summer because of the heat waves that were hitting Florida.
How difficult was that? I mean, you, a ninth grader, yes, eighth grader at that time, huh? You took on a monumental task. We got to take a break. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and this hour I'm talking with members of the Young Environmental Leaders community. I had to interrupt Charlotte. Charlotte is the organizer of the climate strikes here in Tallahassee. Charlotte, would you continue?
Yes. So we were just talking about the difficulty it was to be a ninth grader and organizing a climate strike, especially one that's every other Friday. But at the time, it didn't feel quite as difficult. It wasn't as much of a big task. I thought, you know, in my head, I was just filling out an application form to reserve space at the Capitol. And then I was, you know, trying to get people to join me. And that was a really difficult part. I was scared that nobody else was going to, you know, want to rally for the same cause, especially in the middle of a school day.
Well, I'm impressed, you know. I'm very impressed to have you on the program. Okay, thanks for coming and sharing that. What are some of the accomplishments, and this is to all of you, that Yale has made you most proud of?
I personally am very proud of all of the Yale students. Just the fact that they take time out of their Saturday to go out and do something that's impacting their community. In the case of Sabrina and Charlotte, educating and advocating for things that matter to them. So I'm proud of all of them. But I'm especially proud of our Yale students that go up and speak out for the things that they believe in, like Charlotte and Sabrina do.
So the advocacy component mm-hmm. of it. Okay. I haven't heard from you, Lena.
I know. Sure. Hello. I'm still here, everyone. Hi. I would like to say I'm also proud of all the students. At their ages, they really don't need to be doing the things that they're doing, mm-hmm. but they have a deep understanding that it's important for them. It's important for future generations, and climate change itself is important. So,
yeah. To the students, do you feel like people are listening? Do you feel like old folks really are have an appreciation for what you're saying and where you're coming from? Or do you think the future is really forget those old folks and let's deal with the young?
I personally think that, you know, older people definitely have a major role in, mm-hmm. You know, moving towards the future, but also looking back at our past, of course. I think, in a way, I hope that they don't fully understand just quite yet, because if they really understood the situation, as Greta Thunberg said, and they weren't acting, then that wouldn't, that's not good. That doesn't make them very good people, because, you know, we know the facts, we know the science behind the facts that our generation is going to be severely impacted by climate change, and that this is being caused by all the carbon that we're emitting right now.
Do you find that they're receptive? How about you? Do you find that the older generation is receptive to what you have to say and what you're trying to accomplish? Or are they just clueless?
Well, I think everyone is different.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, I think, they don't maybe understand as well. Maybe they didn't. They don't understand what's happening to our Earth. They don't really care that much. Maybe they're more looking for convenience rather than energy safety.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have met a lot of adults who really do care about the environment and care for their future children's, and just they want to leave behind a good Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I've seen a lot of older people at meetings as well as younger people. And I think there are people who care and some people who don't. It really depends.
Now, I know there are challenges. Jacob, can you think of maybe some of the challenges that you may encounter in trying to get your point across, to get your project, the people to understand? Yeah.
I think one of the big problems is figuring out, like, who will do, like, the actual work of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, to compost, you have to, like, bring the food scraps out. And you have to turn the pile. Which, like, and so it's will be hard to find people who are willing to take on that extra time.
I would think those who are particularly into maybe gardening would have a particular, you know, interest. Am I right or wrong? Or so
yeah.
That might be a population that you could mm-hmm. focus on.
I agree. I think garden, like people who have the tendency to garden
mm-hmm.
would also be more inclined to compost
mm-hmm.
because they're both like they both take like a labor and
right.
They're both like outdoor activities. But on the other hand, there like aren't as many gardening type people around that I can like try and promote my project to.
Okay.
Most of the people just don't garden.
Have you thought, you know, now we have so many community gardens that might be an avenue that you could pursue? And because we must have about 10, 15 community gardens here in Tallahassee. And that, you know, I'm just throwing that out there. That might be an avenue that you may pursue in getting your project started. So I don't know if that's something would be helpful. As far as the challenges that you have encountered, both of you, be it Charlotte or Sabrina, what do you see as the challenges?
Well, specifically for my project, I have school during those times.
Yeah.
So I get out later. So when I have those presenting times, it's probably going to be like towards the later of this end of the school, mm-hmm. or maybe in science classes, I might only be able to present to one period and not the others. So being able to find a good presenting time so that I can reach a lot of people, that's a little bit of a challenge that mm-hmm. I'm having.
Okay.
I think that one of my biggest problems is people who I call climate procrastinators. They aren't people who straight up don't believe that climate change or global warming is a problem, but they also aren't people who are ready to take immediate action. They're the people who say it's too far off and distant, or we don't have time or economic, we're not in an economic situation for us as a country particularly to change how we do things. But these people, they're sort of trapped in the middle, so I'm not there to tell them the science because they know the science, but I'm not there to tell them to work because they're not going to work. They don't fully understand the issue. And I think that's been the biggest roadblock in getting to where we need to be, because people think that because they acknowledge climate change that it will solve itself, and they don't have to take any real change in their mm-hmm. lives or as a nation in our infrastructure.
I want to pick your brain a little bit more about just the climate strikes. You didn't share with us how often they occur.
Yes.
And I think it's really important. I was just very mm-hmm. impressed. So if you will share how often they occur, where they are, and I know that there is a major one forthcoming. Right?
Yes. So we climate strike every other Friday. We go out onto the historic Capitol steps of Florida's Capitol building. That's in front of the museum. And we sit with our signs from 9 to 1. Some people come for just their lunch break. Other people come, other slots of time. And then we have people who stay the entire day. Our next big strike is November 29th. That is Black Friday. And the significance of that day is, of course, Black Friday is a day famed for its consumerism. And consumerism is one of the major problems that we're experiencing because people feel very entitled to stuff they don't need, and that's not a sustainable way to live. So the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, November 29th, that's going to be our next large climate strike. Hope to see you there.
Well, thanks for sharing that. I know that community service hours, share with us what that is and what they accomplish, what they do to get community service hours. You had shared that when you were telling me, Nikki, about, some of the projects and some of the advantages of becoming a member.
Mm-hmm. So many of our high school students look for community service hours because that's how they get bright futures, or sometimes they're in certain programs that require community service hours. So we try to make sure that they have the opportunities to get those, and they can get them whenever we have any sort of advocacy day. If we're going out and striking, talking to members of their neighborhood, tabling, canvassing, that sort of thing.
Okay. How large, and that's something I neglected to ask you, how many students do you have involved in Yale?
So currently we have about 15 Yale members. Majority of those are high school students, primarily from Rickards High School, and we do have a few high school students from Leon, and we have one or two middle schoolers and elementary schoolers.
Okay. So you have a wide range.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you get your curriculum so that it addresses all of them?
Mm-hmm. So the cool thing about Yale is we don't really have a curriculum.
Okay.
The kids kind of get to decide where the club goes based on their interests. We'll ask them, what are the issues that really concern you? Mm-hmm. And then they can kind of direct the club based on that. So, for instance, everybody was very, very concerned about climate-related issues. So we made it a point to participate in Climate Week, which happened mm-hmm. a few weeks ago. And I lost my train of thought.
That's all right. We'll come back because you said that as far as climate-related issues are concerned, what are your concerns? What are climate-related issues from where you sit as a student? Looking at you, you're in the hot seat, okay. So it's on you, Sabrina.
So breathing in polluted air is like smoking a pack of cigarettes. When I visited China, I was just enveloped in smog. I can no longer see the blue sky. The clean air becomes a luxury rather than a given. And citizens, they have to wear masks when they go outside. And I can't even open a window without fearing about my health. And then so I got involved because I don't want that to be my reality. And then for some people, it already is. And then if I live to my full life extent, which I hopefully will, I'm going to be living on this planet for like 80 or more so years. And that's a very long time. And during these years, I want to be able to breathe clean air, have sustainable energy, and have a trash-free environment. And I want the same thing for future generations, too. And I don't know if you've seen the movie WALL-E. It's a children's show. The Earth is so waste-ridden and polluted, it's become inhabitable. And I don't want that dystopian future to be our present. And then children and adults alike taking action gives me hope that it might not be.
When you were in China, mm-hmm. why is there so much? I mean, that's the one thing you hear from everyone about the smog and how horrible it is. But what is it that's creating all of this?
Coal.
Okay.
Their main energy
Their
source
main
is coal.
Energy and that coal is... Mm-hmm. Are they concerned about it?
I mean, yes, they are concerned. They are taking action now, I've heard.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So where do you sit? Where do you see?
Yeah. So there's a saying in the young environmental activist community in general that goes, well, you'll die of old age, I'll die of climate change. And that's a very,
that's not too
very
cool.
dark statement. But again, I don't want for that to become my reality. In the future, I want to have kids. And for a long time, I was very decided against having kids. I told my mother, that's never happening. And
I could see that. Who wants to bring kids into this world?
Exactly. And also, the uncertainty of what my future is going to look like scares me a lot. I plan everything I do. I'm kind of an obsessive planner. And I'm normally fine if the plan changes. I just have to have an idea what the plan's going to be. But really having no idea of what the world's going to look like in 20 years, like, not just on terms of, what new gadgets are going to be available, but, will these species still be alive, mm-hmm. is a very, very large component in my decision to become an activist, because I just see such an issue for, a huge segment of our population, a billion people. And, yeah, that's...
Yep. Okay. Jacob, when we talk about this whole climate-related issues, what do you see as some of the major issues that we as a people need to be addressing here in the United States and even Florida? Let's put it that way. We can narrow it down even more. What would you identify?
I think the draining of, swamps is a large issue, because that's just, ruining, irreplaceable habitats. And I also think the overfishing the fishing industry mm-hmm. needs to be corrected, because, I read somewhere that we use in 18 months the resources that can only be replenished every year. We use resources that can only be replenished every 18 months.
Oh.
And so,
yeah,
I think that's not sustainable.
What role do you think the government should play? And when we look at the climate and what's happening to our climate?
I think,
Jacob,
the government should, play an active part in trying to reduce climate change. Because mm-hmm. it has so much power to do that. So, I feel like it should try to like, reduce carbon emissions more.
Okay.
Because that's a pressing problem.
Sabrina, where do you sit on this?
So I used to lobby at the Capitol. I would go up to representative aides, and this, we would talk about, like, co-sponsoring and sponsoring bills. And, you know, there's, like, some pretty extreme ones out there, like banning plastic single-use plastic straws, or, like, trying to implement, like, these solar credits and stuff. And I think that the government can have, like, such a huge impact on our environment based on, like, the bills and the laws that they pass and how they regulate all of it.
How are you received when you go down?
There are some where they do agree with us and they try to fight for that bill.
Do they just dismiss little young kids, you know? I mean, do you get that attitude?
I was with my director when I did that, so I'm not exactly sure if they would have dismissed me if I was by myself. I would like to believe that they wouldn't. But there are some people who are just like, it's not possible, we can't do that, or just like, oh, we'll think about it.
But at least they are at least receptive to that. Well, that's good.
And
you know what? Before I have you start, because we're getting ready to take a break, and I don't want to have to interrupt you again, Charlotte, like I did before, I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts and just tell the listening audience that I am talking with members of the Young Environmental Leaders community. I have Charlotte Stewart Tilley. I have Jacob Sperber. I have Nicole Knutson. Okay, she's basically the supervisor. And I have Leland McCullough. She, I guess, is the coordinator. And I have Sabrina Hill. We're going to take a break, but we will get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and again, I am talking with members of the Young Environmental Leaders. I didn't let you even start, but now you're in the hot seat, Charlotte. Share with us.
All right, so we were, of course, talking about the advocacy work that we do. So I go down and I also lobby at the Capitol, along with Sabrina. Not together yet, but that's a project we should work on. But I think I talked earlier about climate procrastinators and how they often, they're the people who don't believe climate change is such a pressing issue, but they do believe that climate change is a problem. Well, in our legislators in Florida, many of them are straight-up climate deniers. They're not even that procrastination range. They have outwardly said that climate change is either not an issue or not an issue that is we're part of, so it's just a natural thing, or even worse, that there is no climate change happening at all. And I have had the pleasure.
Well, at least you're allowed to say it.
Yeah.
Okay, because there was a time you couldn't say it. Okay, I'm not.
Yeah. Well, oh, yeah, okay. Definitely. Only recently, I think people allow to teach it in schools. So I'm going to call out Representative Neil Dunn and say that he has. We're very close to his office here in Leon County, and he has not done the best job at working on climate policy. And I know that there are others. Nationwide and statewide, who need to do a better job of this, and it's really difficult to reach people who don't believe that the constituents who really care about this. So, you know, Sabrina and I and Jacob, because we aren't a voting age yet, so they don't really have much of a push.
Mabel, you all have a better handle on this and can explain it to me. How can people say it doesn't exist? With all the changes that are happening in our environment, how can they deny it? Whoever. Yes, Jacob.
I feel like it might be easier for people in our country to deny it because, like, if you don't live on the coast, mm-hmm. you don't really see any, like, big changes happening. Like, mm-hmm. here in Tallahassee, we've had, like, slightly warmer weather. And
yeah.
more than slightly, I'd say.
Slightly.
And more hurricanes, but, like, it would be, like, you could argue that that's just random chance that's been happening for, like, 5 years in a row. So, but I feel like if, like, our country, you can supports more mm-hmm. the non-climate change perspective.
Okay. Yes.
I also think that it's a lot of deals money to, like, oil companies and these fracking companies. They want to make money, so they're trying to tell these citizens, no, climate change doesn't exist. And, well, they might get all this money, but our Earth is just dying.
I know. What's it going to look like in 10 years?
Exactly.
Oh, and then I would also add that for the past 200 years, we've been, you know, basically pushed into thinking by propaganda that, you know, in order to achieve that dream life, you know, the American dream is a good example, that, you know, the route to that one path that we're all trying to get to, you know, millionaires and billionaires are idolized because they have money. And the truth of it is that the funding and the financial systems would not be in place without fossil fuels. And they have gotten us to where we are now, but we have to get ourselves off of them. There is no way we can continue using them.
Mm-hmm. I also think that it's because it's easier to deny that it yeah. exists than yes. to take action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Young Environmental Leaders is a great avenue for students to earn scholarships and gain community service hours, network with the community leaders, and explore STEM careers. Let's talk about scholarships. What scholarship options are available? Who, when, what, how? Share with us about the scholarships.
So our Yale members that are graduating soon are eligible for scholarships. They do have to be a part of the club and be active. That means having projects and mm-hmm. attending meetings regularly. But they are eligible for scholarships, and all they have to do is apply for them, and we have grant money for the mm-hmm. Yale program that we can use towards those scholarships.
Okay. And so the scholarships, I gather, are very broad. I mean, it's just what's the criteria?
I honestly don't know if there even is any criteria. Oh. Just I think that I'm not the person who's mm-hmm. qualified to mm-hmm. speak on this because I'm not the person that handles the finances, and I also didn't start the club.
Okay.
But I do believe that it's just for any high-achieving Yale members.
Okay, well, I just wondered if one had to be continuing their education or...
No, you know. No.
Wow, that sounds like a good deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah, yes. I thought you had to, somebody had their hand up. My peripheral vision is off, okay? Now, you also talk about networking with community leaders. Who are the community leaders? And I don't mean that you have to give me specifics, but what if somebody's listening and they go, wow, that sounds like a really interesting program. What type of community leaders, what type of networking are we talking about? Can you share that? Yes.
I think a big one is teachers.
Okay.
Teachers there with students so many hours of the day. And I think being able to promote that and, like, be able to educate that as well and, like, maybe guide them towards the Young Environmental Leaders Club, that'd be really great.
Okay.
Yeah. So teachers, that's a really great outlet to start networking. A lot of our students network with their teachers to further their projects, and they also network with community members that are experts in their field of interest. So, for instance, Jacob is interested in composting, so right. he'll be speaking with some local composting experts. So that is where a lot of the networking experience comes in.
So, again, share with us how one contacts young environmental leaders for whatever the reason may be. What is the contact information, email, telephone number, whatever?
So you can email me. My name is Nicole Knutson, but I go by Nikki. My email is nikki@rethinkenergyflorida.org. And Florida is the full word, not just FL.
Okay. All right. Sustainability. What does sustainability mean to you? And how do you advocate for it? And I'll throw that to the students, okay?
So I would say that sustainability is really reducing our consumption of everything. I think especially in the Western world, we have this obsession with stuff and accumulating more food and, you know, going more places and living this life of luxury. I talked, you know, before on the American Dream. But I think sustainability is realizing that we need to go down on that. We have been over-consuming for far too long for us to continue doing this. And definitely reaching a point where we can, you know, eat less meat is a big one. Agriculture is one of the biggest sectors in what's contributing to carbon emissions. Buying less things. I'm working on becoming a minimalist myself, which I think that's a bit of an extreme for a lot of, you know, common, like, households, because my family as itself has a lot of stuff. But I think definitely sustainability is realizing that we don't need as much of anything as we've been told we do.
How do you get there? You might give us some hints. I mean, you said you're working on that. How do you get there? How would you tell someone to walk in those footsteps? What do they need to do? How do they start?
I think it starts as, you know, recognizing that it is a journey that you will always go through for the rest of your life, because you will always need food on, you know, a day-to-day basis. You will always need things on a day-to-day basis. But it's realizing that one step at a time, you can reduce what you own and what you consume. But I think the best place to start is to realize that you don't need to be buying that thing. You have things already in your refrigerator to take to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
You have, you know, you have the people, you know, who need things that you don't just throw away what you don't need anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We
throw away a lot.
Yeah.
Sustainability.
Someone once told me that the best thing is that we have... It's not that a few people do minimalism perfectly. It's that a lot of people do it imperfectly. And actually, funnily enough, Charlotte was the one who told me that.
And that applies to zero waste, too. We have people who make no trash, which isn't really attainable right now for most households. But if everybody made less trash, like, say, a garbage bag less a week, then that would reduce our impact by, you know, landfills.
What you have to do, or maybe you have suggestions, how do you combat Madison Avenue? Because they're promoting exactly the opposite of what you're saying. And yet you're right, because what you're saying is we don't need nearly as much of anything that we utilize. That's what I hear you saying. I got it right. Of anything that we use every day.
Well,
I mean, because we're getting these, your message is clear, but then we got Madison Avenue and social media.
Very overpowering.
That's right.
So my family, a lot of members of my family really like shopping. Shopping is their hobby. And while that is not my thing, both because I am a broke freshman in high school, and then also because, you know, I don't believe shopping is the answer, I respect that. And I see that shopping is something they get, you know, pleasure out of, that it's a hobby for them. I think what a lot of them thrift shop for clothing. And while some families might, you know, see that as kind of like gross and icky, there is a washing machine that, you know, you can run clothing through, and that's that's helpful. Even then, sometimes I understand that people can be, you know, a bit wary to wear that clothing. But thrift shopping, and then also just making shopping like less of a hobby for you. So picking up something else, like, you know, maybe going hiking with your family and prioritizing experiences over what you own. I forgot the question.
we were talking about sustainability.
Yeah. So definitely taking, you know, not taking zero waste or minimalism to an extreme, because that's just not an expectation that people should hold of you. Mm-hmm. But saying, I will make a commitment personally to buy less this Christmas, or to say, you know, instead we're going to, you know, do a family Frisbee night instead of, you know, going shopping.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
Feeding off of what Charlotte said, it's knowing what you need and what you don't need. Mm-hmm. So, also energy sustainability, turning off your lights, knowing that you probably don't need that object, even though it's nice and shiny, you can just step away.
Mm-hmm. That demands self-control. Do you have suggestions on sustainability or thoughts about it, Jacob?
I agree with Charlotte and Sabrina. I think that, like, going away from what you own, or not going away, but being less focused on that, mm-hmm. is a step that needs to be taken. I mean, like, right now, a lot of my hobbies are computer-based, like chess, mm-hmm. and things. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, less material-based. And also, like, I like to do things that aren't material-based. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I feel like there's a lot of stuff that can be reduced.
Okay. So, yes, somebody was going to say something, I thought.
I'll go for it. I think education is also a really big thing, too. Knowing that, you know, plastic bottles are so bad for the environment, and that you could just, like, especially in Tallahassee, you can just drink the tap water and it's safe. Like, I actually had to learn that recently because I used to...
We're not in Flint, Michigan. Okay.
I used to be wary of drinking tap water, but then now I know that it's, like, it's perfectly fine. And it's also, like, knowing, like, oh, I don't need a plastic bag if you're at, like, at a grocery store and something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just even, like, just little things that build up.
So small things can make a world of difference.
Especially if everyone is doing these little small things.
Right. Well, you mentioned education, and I know that STEM interfaces a lot with talk about it. How does STEM interface, and where does STEM fit in the whole advocacy and the whole program of young environmental leaders?
Well, quite literally, I think science is life, because, you know, you look around and everything that we see around us has either been discovered, you know, categorized, or created by science and by people recognizing that, you know, this was a thing or there was a need for a thing. And so I think, you know, STEM in particular, as we move forward, we're going to need to go back to that science and technology and engineering and mathematics that we've all, we've grown up with. And we need to say, how can we use this for our future? And because we are the young leaders of the future, how can we personally use STEM to move our country forward and move the world forward?
I think STEM as a whole is used to advance our society forward, everything about it, like technology, engineering, mathematics, science. So that's what, like, YEL is about, like, moving forward, progressing, trying to make our society more sustainable, like, with these new technologies, like fuel cells. and just trying to make our society better as a whole.
Okay. Any suggestions or comments on STEM?
Is that, like, relating to the schools?
Yeah, well, just the science, technology, that how it relates to the Young Environmental Leaders program.
I think that science and technology is, like, one of the best hopes for figuring out the environmental situation. Because, like, as my mom likes to say, you, like, never know if there could be, like, a good idea in the future.
Okay. All right.
While I don't think we should, like, bank on that, I think it's a good thing to keep in mind.
Well, It's that time, and I really would like to extend a sincere appreciation for you all participating. You have just been wonderful and very insightful and very educational. To my listening audience, I'd like to say thanks for your time and the privilege of your ear. That's basically it for this hour. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.